It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. For women, a trip to the doctor may come with some extra worries that they might not be taken seriously by a healthcare provider, that a physical symptom might be dismissed as psychosomatic, as all in her head. Our next guest is a doctor. In her new book, she says the development of modern medicine was, in a lot of ways, built on wrong ideas about women and their bodies. Sometimes really weird ideas about women and their bodies that still have an impact to this day. She says that having a better knowledge of this history can help women to ask better questions and be stronger advocates for their care and help providers deliver better care. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a woman, what level of care do you feel like you get in hospital or clinic settings? Do you feel listened to? Do you apologize for bringing things up in that doctor's office? Do you feel confident, empowered to talk about what's going on with your body? And if you are a medical care provider, think back to your training. Do you think it prepared you to deal with men and women more or less equally? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Elizabeth Coleman is a clinician and physician scientist who works as a medical oncologist at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, specializing in breast cancer. She's an assistant professor of medicine at Weill Cornell Medical College, and her new book is called All in Her Head, The Truth and Lies Early Medicine Taught Us About Women's Bodies and Why It Matters Today. Dr. Coleman, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Before we start digging into that history, can you talk a little bit about what you see as a provider of healthcare to women and as a woman who's needed healthcare yourself in medicine today that made you want to dig into that history?
Absolutely. So as you said, I'm a medical oncologist specializing in breast cancer. I've cared for thousands and thousands of women over the course of my career. And in that, really been privy to just how many countless women have told me stories of feeling dismissed, misunderstood, invalidated for their pain, and in some instances, misdiagnosed or not diagnosed. And it's heartbreaking. And also, you know, I'm talking to you as a doctor, but of course, I've been a patient myself and had those similar sorts of experiences and cared for women in my family where it just was absolutely impossible to try to find the care that they deserved and needed. And my supreme hope is that this book is part of a greater mission to improve the health of women across the country.
And big picture, as you look at the rise of modern medicine, the 1800s into the 1900s, I think, yeah, in particular, can you talk about, I guess, the atmosphere that the people who were developing our modern medicine were living in and where it started to steer them in weird directions when it came to women?
Absolutely. Well, we know that medicine and the experience of illness is not just about the biology of disease, but is inextricably linked to history and culture and religion. And of course, throughout history, there's never really been a Western medical philosophy that elevated women's bodies or their brains for that matter as powerful and as worthy of that as men. And that really, in those themes really infused the rise of medicine at the turn of the 19th century. One of the things that we know is that medicine became more scientific, more codified. You had the rise of more rigorous standards in medical schools. But as you had this rise of the scientific revolution in germ theory and medical schools, women were increasingly sidelined from that knowledge. Historically, you may have women taking care of other women or women as the caregivers in their family, or even women as midwives. But as medicine became more specialized and scientific, women were, as a part of that sideline, they weren't allowed into medical school. And so all of these fields of medicine that became hyper-specialized, like cardiology and gastroenterology and neurology, were really developed by men, with many of the patients being women. And that inequity really played out in terms of how women were treated, what was studied, and also what continues to be funded to this day in terms of what we care about with respect to women's health.
One thing that really struck me as a powerful visual metaphor is the skeletons of women and men. Yeah. Some of the early illustrations used in medical references, when they have an image of a woman's skeleton, they would exaggerate the size of the pelvis and shrink the skull a little bit, you know, anatomically, yeah, unlikely. This means something, I think. Talk about that a little.
Right. One of the things that was so really eye-opening, literally, when I was doing the research of this book is the imagery of women. So even during my medical training, when I learned about the female body or the skeleton for that matter, anatomical textbooks were really skewed towards visualizing the male form. And anytime I saw women's bodies, it was with respect to a reproductive function. So if I were learning about the skeleton, it would be the skeleton of a male form, or the heart, it was the heart in a male form, or the lungs in a male form. And when you go back in time and you look at the depiction of female skeletons versus male skeletons, it's infused again with ideas about what is women's function and what are they capable of. So whether the skulls were smaller or the hips were exaggerated, that related to how men saw women's bodies literally and figuratively as members of society and what was of value for their bodies.
Talking to Dr. Elizabeth Coleman about her new book, All in Her Head, The Truth and Lies Early Medicine Taught Us About Women's Bodies and Why It Matters Today. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Maybe you have an experience from the doctor's office to share. 800-642-1234. Dr. Coleman, you mentioned the heart, and that was another amazing thing. One of the founders, it sounds like, of our modern way of thinking about the human heart and treating it and heart attacks and more in medicine. Dismiss the idea that women really had heart attacks. Tell us that story, please.
So Sir William Osler was one of the most important founding fathers of medicine as we know it today. He practiced at Johns Hopkins and helped develop the residency system and the training, the rigorous training that medical students go through to this day. And he was always so revered, and he deserves to be revered in many ways. But when I went back to look at, well, what did this founding father say about women and heart disease? It was really quite shocking. Case after case of his original records basically referred to women as having heart or chest pain as hysterical angina, and angina being the word for chest pain. But when he talked about men, well, this was incredibly serious, and particularly the white male with white hair working really hard at his job was at high risk for, that was the classic person that you imagine having a heart attack. And if you think about, even in popular culture, this is who we imagine, you know, the man hard at work in the office, clutching his chest, sweating, having a heart attack. And throughout my medical training, and to this day, when we think about women's heart disease, which is the number one killer of women, most doctors through their training learned that the way that women present with heart disease and a heart attack is atypical. But why would our symptoms be viewed as atypical when we're greater than 50% of the population and it's the number one killer of women? So the language of how these founding fathers refer to women's hearts and other diseases for that matter still plays out in this insidious way when we show up at the doctor's office or don't. Women are more likely to call an ambulance on their husband having a heart attack than recognize and know to call an ambulance on themselves. That absolutely needs to change, and that legacy needs to evolve to a more equitable place in our healthcare system.
And that particular doctor also points toward the title of your book, All in Her Head. Whether we're talking about heart problems or the list goes on and on, this idea that a woman's reported physical symptoms are psychosomatic. Talk a little bit, please, about the origins of that and why it became such a big thing.
Well, if you look at the word hysterical and hysteria, that comes from the Greek word for womb. And early on, we know that Greek physicians would refer to the wandering womb as being the source of women's ills. This one organ was just wreaking havoc throughout women's body. And throughout history, even though we obviously learned that the womb doesn't wander, this idea that something about women made them crazy was pervasive, whether it was our ovaries, whether it was the clitoris, whether it was the discovery of estrogen, and my goodness, we're bathing in something that just makes us head to toe completely nuts. Throughout history, you see this specter of the hysterical woman playing out, whether it's in ancient Greeks, whether it's the ancient, you know, anxious housewife being given way too much Valium in the 1970s, or even today, the way we may be overprescribing antidepressants to women who have menopause, who may have symptoms that we could use other medications for other than just throwing antidepressants at it.
And you give an example of a patient who's diagnosed, I think it's with anxiety. Turns out she's had Epstein-Barr, the virus that causes mono, causing the problems for years. This hasn't gone away. Sometimes we just are quick to throw that anxiety label now on women, which may be real, but it might hide something else more treatable.
Well, of course, anxiety is a vicious cycle. If you feel like you have something intuitively medically wrong with you and you're told consistently that you're just anxious, well, you're going to become more and more anxious because you feel like something's wrong. You feel like nothing's being addressed. So of course, many of these women were anxious. The story that you're talking about was a well-known journalist who spoke to me about, you know, she had been in war settings and war zones and really didn't suffer from anxiety. In fact, she had had a history of a cancer diagnosis and knew, you know, I know when I'm anxious, I know when I'm stressed out. And she developed Bell's palsy. She had several other neurologic symptoms and went to many different neurologists who said, I think that this is really quote unquote all in your head and you're just anxious. Ultimately, she finally found a different neurologist who validated, you know what, something's really wrong here. You have a reactivation of Epstein-Barr virus. She was given antiretrovirals, which treated that and ultimately got better. But for this woman who had been in such high stress situations and anxiety provoking situations to have to repeat over and over again, I am not anxious. This is not all in my head. Something is wrong and you need to help me is a constant refrain I hear from so many women, which is why when I say, oh, the title of my book is All in Her Head, there's almost this collective sigh and women want to share their story of what has happened to them when they were dismissed, when they were told they were just anxious, when something happened to be actually really medically wrong above and beyond anxiety.
We're talking to Dr. Elizabeth Coleman, medical oncologist at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Her new book is called All in Her Head, The Truth and Lies Early Medicine Taught Us About Women's Bodies and Why It Matters Today. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question for our guest about her book, her look back at the history of medicine? If you are a woman working who has worked in the medical field, what was your experience like? Do you have experiences as a patient you'd like to share with us? You're willing to share with us. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation with Dr. Elizabeth Coleman, medical oncologist at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Her new book is called All in Her Head, The Truth and Lies Early Medicine Taught Us About Women's Bodies and Why It Matters Today. Let's go to your calls at 800-642-1234. Sierra is with us in Wautoma. Sierra, hello.
Hi there. I am a current nurse practitioner student, and so in my clinical rotations, I've seen a few things, two things mainly. First is that women are mainly the caregivers that we look out to. They're the ones that convince their husbands to come in. They're the ones who should know their medical, their medication treatments and procedures and wound care and that kind of stuff, where they're the ones we usually spend the most time educating on. And then second, I actually had a patient who was going to the, an elderly patient who was going to the ER for chest pain. And eventually her primary care provider diagnosed her with anxiety, but put her on a 30-day heart monitor as well, just to see if there's anything else that had been going on. Come to find out, she had third-degree heart block and needed a pacemaker, like, immediately. So I thought that was interesting to share as well.
Sierra, thanks for sharing those experiences. Couple interesting points there. Dr. Coleman, what strikes you?
Thank you so much for sharing. And unfortunately, your stories are all too common. With respect to women being the caregivers of society, this is absolutely true on every front. And what is particularly compounded by this reality and truly heartbreaking is, who cares for women when they get sick? What happens when we realize that women are two times more likely, for example, to have Alzheimer's disease than men? And when you have diseases of the aging woman, who cares for those women? I remember there were several different doctors during my career that said, oh, you know, I wish I had a daughter like you. I only have sons. So, you know, you really need a doctor who's a female in the family or someone who's a healthcare provider that's a female to really make sure you're going to be cared for. And that's just simply unacceptable. We need to make sure that every member of society both feels cared for and capable of caring for the next person. And historically, and to this day, that burden lies with women, which makes it even harder for them to access their own care. I can't tell you how many women will never miss a dentist appointment for their children or a checkup or checking in on their husband to make sure that they go to their doctor's appointment for their shoulder pain, but then come to me and say, you know, I just didn't have time to get my mammogram. I didn't have the time. And that's simply heartbreaking. With respect to the second point, absolutely, women and heart disease and chest pain is all too commonly dismissed as anxiety. One of the things that I learned in researching for this book is that the EKG was really developed on the male form and not women, and that the EKG is a snapshot in time of the electrical activity of the heart, but can also vary with respect to a woman's hormonal status and her menstrual cycle. I take care of women all day, every day, and I did not know that fact. So we are clearly missing the boat about key points about women's roles in society, but also their medical concerns across the board, head to toe.
Sierra, thanks for the call. Janet is with us now in Eau Claire. Janet, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Janet?
Well, it's an odd subject in some ways, but at 60 years old, I was put on Ritalin because they finally diagnosed me with ADHD. And that has become more and more prevalent in the last 3 years on a lot of social media, et cetera. But people just refuse to believe that women or girls have ADHD. And that's been going on for way too long. And the impact it has on our lives long term is terrible. And I was diagnosed for everything under the sun, anxiety, depression, tried on different treatments without ever thinking that I might have ADHD. So that is, I think, a really big women's health problem at this point.
Interesting, Janet. Well, I hope that diagnosis and treatment helps you. Dr. Coleman, do we think of conditions like ADHD as for boys or maybe men?
Janet, I'm so sorry for your suffering, and thank you for your willingness to share on the call today. That takes a lot of vulnerability, I know. And in writing All in Her Head, I can tell you that so much I couldn't include in the book, but every chapter I felt could be its own book. And in the nervous system chapter, this is something that I heard from countless psychiatrists, that we are missing the diagnosis of ADHD because of how we classically expect certain symptoms to present, and they may present differently in men versus women. But across the board, I heard that many times, that women being diagnosed with anxiety or depression when really they had ADHD, and these labels and how in turn we care for women become incredibly important. The language of how we listen to women instead of just imposing what we think is wrong with them, but really taking the time to listen. And one of the things that's really problematic with our healthcare system today, and you know, this is beyond which I can certainly fix as one person, is the ecosystem with how we care for patients is often very rushed. We are more beholden to electronic medical record and clicking diagnosis codes because of external pressures or third-party players like insurance companies. And we don't have the time that we really want to spend with patients to listen to what's going on, to really understand what they may be going through so that we can treat them effectively. But Janet, I'm sorry, your story is all too common. And I'm glad that you have the help that you finally need at this point in your life.
Definitely. Thanks again for calling, Janet. Dr. Elizabeth Coleman is with us, talking about her new book, All in Her Head. Back to your calls now. Catherine joins us from Waukesha. Catherine, what story did you want to share?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. So the good news of this story is that I'm now in my 70s and am very healthy and active. But when I was 45, I kept experiencing an odd pain by my left shoulder blade. And I had reported it to my female primary care physician, who kept telling me I was anxious, even though I have never been treated for or diagnosed with anxiety. So one day I am walking across the parking lot going into work, and I developed a burning sensation in the center of my chest. And I did end up going to the emergency department. I work in healthcare. I'm a psychologist, oddly enough. And I was fortunate enough to encounter a cardiologist who examined me and listened to my symptoms. And when they did an angiogram, my left main coronary artery was 95% occluded.
Wow. Catherine, I'm sorry, that's all the time we have. I'm glad you're still with us 30 plus years later. Dr. Coleman, again, Catherine's story, probably she's not the only one out there.
she's definitely not the only one. And my God, I'm so glad that you were ultimately examined and got the right care by a cardiologist. One thing I want to point out is you said you were seen by a female physician. I think one really important point about my book and this greater mission is that this is not about a war between men versus women as providers. This is about really honoring how everybody, man and women, can care for women better. We know that we need a diversity of spirit of the way that we care for women. Historically, women, and we know to this day, spend more time listening to patients, maybe seen as the mom consults where we're more empathic. There's absolutely no reason why male physicians cannot model what we know women may do better in some instances. It has to do with what we value in our healthcare system. Some of the most incredible providers that I work with are men. And certainly this isn't necessarily about the sex you were born with, but how we value some of these more historically seen as feminine traits in both men and women and offer that care to everybody equitably.
Catherine, thanks a lot for that call. And in just our last few moments, Dr. Coleman, are we doing better?
I think we are doing better. I think that, you know, if you look at the White House right now, there's the Women's Health Initiative to improve the kind of funding that we spend. You're having me on this show, which means that there is value to this conversation. I think there's a growing groundswell where women are advocating for themselves and saying, I need to be heard. There's lots of reason to have hope. And I'm so grateful for your audience today and their participation and for our shared collective drive to improve the healthcare of everybody.
Dr. Coleman, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Dr. Elizabeth Coleman, medical oncologist at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. We've been talking about her new book. It's called All in Her Head, The Truth and Lies Early Medicine Taught Us About Women's Bodies and Why It Matters Today. Remember, you could share these conversations online at WPR.org or go back and listen to archive conversations as well. Again, find all that great WPR content online at WPR.org. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to The Ideas Network.